Welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard with a 21st century perspective behind history's greatest rock and roll star. Today in the studio, the darkest of midnights and the brightest of days in the musical life and career of our forever man, Eric Clapton. It's a long way to just music. It comes and goes. That's when she said she was pretending. Just like she knew the plan. And I knew she was pretending. Pretending to understand. Pretending. This week in the studio, superstar Eric Clapton joins us. Pretending. The first of two conversations. Pretending. Spotlighting the last 30 years of his career. Pretending. Collected on the multi-disc anthology Forever Man.
This is like, you see, my head is like a mental jukebox, and there's so much stuff in there. It's very tempting. I mean, I sometimes get a mental block, and other times it's just like stuff comes out just for fun, you know, that I want to play. Hello, I'm Eric Clapton. You're cordially invited during the In the Studio special edition with me, Eric Clapton.
If you have the opportunity to see and hear Eric Clapton in a variety of ways these days, his vitality and virtuosity are simply remarkable. Can this hale and hearty, suave and debonair, master musician with the warm and quick smile really be the same brooding guitar prodigy of 50 years ago with John Mayall's Blues Breakers, and then the Yardbirds, Cream, Blind Faith, Derek and the Dominoes, and a 45-year solo career? Seems downright miraculous. The majority of rock music fans may not fully be aware of just how many of Eric Clapton's most well-known hits have been in fact written by others. Clapton's keen ear for the right songs showcases his musical skills, and it goes clear back to his very first solo album in 1970. Bolstered with a new long-term recording contract by 1985's Behind the Sun recording sessions, Eric Clapton had discovered a wellspring of material from the Texas songwriter Jerry Lynn Williams, which would help take Eric's storied career to even loftier heights. Clapton told me that just such a find was the Jerry Williams song Forever Man.
I heard Jerry sing that live many times, and when we were making Behind the Sun, he had come in to help me perform songs like See What Love Can Do and Forever Man. So he was on hand to kind of guide me through these songs, and every time we'd get a little gap in the proceedings, he'd be sit down at the piano and play that. He was playing this song a lot, and there was a simplicity about it that I liked. But I mean, it's a very up in the air song to approach, and you can do it a lot of different ways. And I don't think when I recorded that, I don't think Jerry was around really to give me any guidance, so we just did it the first way I knew how, you know. But I don't actually remember that there was a demo on that. I'm not sure that there was a demo on that I had. I think it was just a recollection of him playing it to me in the studio. Mm. So I didn't actually have an arrangement in mind, in fact. He had never really... See, when he makes a demo and sends it to you, you may think it's a demo on the face of it. But listen again and you'll see it's a damned studied arrangement. It's not actually studied by him, but it's an instinctively studied arrangement. There are things on there that if you tamper with and try and address in a different way, won't work. As his demos are very hard to cover because he's done them just about as well as they can be done.
Times must I explain myself?
Jerry Williams' song Forever Man on Eric Clapton's 1985 album Behind the Sun announced a powerful modern sound played by a new batch of West Coast musicians with Eric Clapton.
The four-piece band, how did you assemble that core four-piece band?
Well, when I had talked to Phil Collins about making another album after Behind the Sun, we had decided to make a collaboration with Warner Brothers in LA to work with known top musicians that in LA that I had already met and decided. And in fact, you know, it was my dream band was for that particular album, which was August, was to have Phil on drums and Greg and Nathan, and that would be it. This quartet, you see, and Phil didn't really know how it would work out, but, you know, he seemed pretty sold on the idea too. And then we went in and made the album, and it was just a joy to see how it sprung up from being a theoretical lineup to a physical working one. And what would happen on a daily basis was that, you know, we'd get songs either that were written from inside or that were, you know, that were submitted from great writers like Lamont Dozier and Jerry Williams, and just to see how quickly this little tiny little nucleus of a band could turn this into a fantastic recording track. I mean, literally with Lamont, you know, he had sent us two songs, and we, by the time he'd got home from delivering the demo tape to the studio, we had made it a final take on the thing.
Well, that's fast.
We'd call him up on the phone and say, listen to this. You know, he just walked in the door, and it was so impressive that we decided by the end, but almost before the, well before the end of the sessions, that we would tour. And this was a problem for Phil. I think we really had him over a barrel there, because he is so committed to his own stuff and to Genesis, that for him to say yes, we'll tour, meant, you know, a great deal of soul searching for him.
His life is booked. If you check
absolutely
with him, he's booked like 2 years from now
easily. And I think that was knowing that the sacrifice he had to make, you know, to come together with us, really bonded the band. And we went out as a quartet right after making the record and toured for quite a little while. And the idea then was that every year on a certain occasion, wasn't specifically then thought of as the Albert Hall, but on some occasion, whenever possible, we would reunite and kind of celebrate that first joy, you know, and that's what we do.
So don't you ever
It's in the Way That You Use It, co-written by Eric Clapton with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Robbie Robertson of the band, not only drove the Clapton album August, it also appeared in the Paul Newman, Tom Cruise movie The Color of Money in fall 1986. Eric confessed that certain songs and their arrangements in the studio are not really always conducive to performing them live in concert. The August album material had some limitations, which was a big consideration when Clapton made the 1989 follow-up called Journeyman.
The main idea, really, was born out of the enjoyment of doing Journeyman itself, because it felt to me when we were making the record that there wasn't really more than maybe two songs on the album that weren't made for live performance. And that's not always the case. I mean, for the album before, which was August, most of the songs on there are pretty difficult to recreate live, because there was a lot of synth stuff and a lot of overdub and a lot of ambiance creation. But there were several things on August which couldn't be, when we tried to approach them live, didn't work. Now, the thing with making Journeyman was we bore that in mind as we made it.
was a Jerry Williams song that heralded the 1989 release of Eric Clapton's 11th studio album. And coming up next, Eric Clapton rejoins me for the universal critical and commercial reaction to it. Of all these songs, they're now included on the multi-disc set Forever Man, in stores and online now. Visit the Eric Clapton store at ericclapton.com. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Eric Clapton for the 30-year anthology Forever Man, Part 1.
Hello, I'm Eric Clapton. You're cordially invited during the In the Studio special edition with me, Eric Clapton, with Redbeard.
Thanks so much, Eric. It's indeed an honor and a real pleasure. The 80s ended with Eric Clapton's 11th studio album, Journeyman, becoming his best seller ever in an already storied career.
Why did you humbly title your studio album Journeyman when many of us feel that you're really the master craftsman?
I mean, a journeyman in England, by the way, is not a lowly term, let's say. It is someone who is a craftsman that travels, basically. You know, not like an apprentice, but to someone who is good at his skill and will move from town to town. So that's kind of like, that's really what I want to be known as. I like to think that I'm a craftsman, and I like to think that that I am working on mastering my craft. But the journeyman theory, the journeyman sort of philosophy is connected to what I was talking about, in that I like to move around musically. I like to touch other things and get fun out of it. It's slightly irresponsible in a way, but it's my way of staying fresh and enjoying my musical life. Instead of being a dedicated blues man, you know, which I could be, and I could, you know, I could really, maybe I couldn't, but I mean, there is a way of approaching that for me. But then I would have to really shut down all the other areas that interest me. And there are many, many, many areas of music, many possibilities of playing different songs in a different way, with different lineups, with orchestras, with blues bands, all kinds of things which I don't really want to relinquish.
written by Eric Clapton and Foreigner's Mick Jones, appearing on Eric's journeyman multi-million seller, Bad Love copped a Grammy Award for Best Male Rock Vocal for Eric Clapton in 1990.
When I got time to put that tour together, the first thing that came to me was, the first thing I wanted to do was to dress up the songs, you know, just see how they would take shape. For instance, like Running on Faith and Pretending and these things, ideal for the stage, really. And I was really interested to see if they were going to change, how they would change, et cetera, et cetera. And Old Love, you know, I mean, it was dying for long solos and things like this. So those were the priorities. And then just to fill round them, to really go through that sort of long, long map of my history and sort out which songs everybody enjoyed. You know, see, that's always important to me, is to find out from everyone in the band what the consensus is on my older material.
That man and that band can swing. Eric Clapton rocking Bo Diddley's Before You Accuse Me, originally on Journeyman. Now one of 51 Eric Clapton performances collected on the multi-disc anthology Forever Man. Still to come, a remarkable account of Eric Clapton rediscovering his past. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Eric Clapton, Forever Man, Part 1.
Hello, I'm Eric Clapton. You're cordially invited during the In the Studio special edition with me, Eric Clapton, with Redbeard.
Thanks again. It's a real treat. Eric Clapton's Journeyman tour presented a bit of a dilemma when it came time to develop a set list. Audiences of 20,000 per night were packing enormous arenas, with newly minted Eric Clapton fans who knew his 80s hits from the radio and MTV in equal parts with longtime fans from his days with John Mayall, the Yardbirds, Cream, Blind Faith, and Derek and the Dominoes.
Well, what made you work up a Sunshine of Your Love and White Room? Because you didn't sing them originally, right?
No, I didn't. Jack sang White Room on the record. And in a way, it took a whole other series of events to bring that song back to my attention, because when I was with Cream, I was very young, and I wasn't particularly taking much notice of what was going on, to be honest with you. I was in my own little world, and just a guitar player with a rock band. The time that we existed and were working and touring, we didn't have all this mania that exists now for the 60s. Cream was really just a little known band from England, sort of slightly less, well, in fact, a lot less known than The Who. And we weren't really aware of what we were. I mean, and I especially wasn't particularly aware of how good the songwriting was. I just was all these songs were just vehicles for me to play riffs in and play solos. And when the Cream broke up and time went by, that all, you know, was another, just to me, gone. You know, gone stuff, gone in the past. And it wasn't until I did the Letterman Show as guest of Paul Schaefer's band that the peculiarity and the niceties of that song were reintroduced to me. When he said, "Look, let's do that for fun." And I heard it as if I was a complete observer, you know, very objectively listened to them play it and then joined in and found that it was a great song. And I actually had to learn the words. I mean, you can believe that. I'd played that song with Cream for a year and a half, 2 years, and didn't even know what the words were. That was the reason for that. And I hope as time goes by, other things will come up like that, you know, because it's not always good to play songs which you have your own series of reasons to play. It's actually nice to get inside someone else's skin and see what they like about it, you know, see what they like about it. So you can just look at it afresh, really.
Yeah, let's go.
Sunshine. I was amused, I don't know if you'll even recall, but I was amused to hear you do licks from two other songs. You got into Motherless Children for a second.
Yeah.
And then you did Born Under a Bad Sign.
Yeah. But this is like, see, my head is like a mental jukebox, and there's so much stuff in there. And it's very tempting. I mean, I sometimes get a mental block, and other times it's just like stuff comes out. Just for fun, you know, that I want to play. I do stuff like that every night. and a lot of it nobody notices, only some that sneak little quotes in. It's also an old tradition that was started by Hendrix. I don't know if there's anything on record to testify to that, but I know when I used to go and see him, when we hung out together, that he would be more than happy to throw little bits of daft sort of ballads of the time at me in the middle of a solo. And it was a tradition that we accepted with one another.
Very good. You're right, he did
Strangers in the Night, and I did Blue Moon on Sunshine of Your Love, you see. That was our little in-joke.
That's good. He always liked Sunshine, didn't he?
Yeah. He did. He used to play that a lot.
Double live album 24 Nights, that's Eric Clapton and superb live band, reprising Cream's Sunshine of Your Love, now included on the collection Forever Man. It was during Cream's 1968 farewell tour that Eric Clapton took a memorable spot at the lead vocal mic, covering Robert Johnson's Delta Blues song Crossroads, beginning an almost half century of reinterpreting other songwriters that, in effect, they become Clapton's own. Bob Marley's I Shot the Sheriff and J.J. Cale's After Midnight, as well as Cocaine, are three of the timeless covers in the Clapton canon.
I mean, sometimes the versions of songs that you really love have to be left alone. You know, it maybe that's it. Maybe that, you know, the best covers should be better than the originals. Shouldn't they? Really? What's the point? Unless you can improve it.
You're right.
Unless you just want to make a few bucks.
No, you're right.
If you're paying a tribute, it's really got to be better. Or an advancement or a kind of evolution of what was originally there. Most people, I think, would do covers of songs that were lesser known or, you know, were obscure by their very nature. So therefore, when they get the cover and they get the hit, you know, there's nothing to compare it to. I mean, I had the fortune with that with I Shot the Sheriff. I mean, I had the... That was a cover and it was a hit, but no one knew about Bob Marley's version until after.
Yeah.
Eric Clapton was the toast of the rock world during the 1990 Journeyman Tour. He had beaten heroin in the 70s, alcoholism in the 80s, and now his musical career was at an all-time high. But unknown to anyone was that the future held unthinkable agony, yet musical ecstasy for Eric Clapton, and we'll find out from him next week when he returns here with me in the studio. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this.